For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Welcome, my friends, to episode number 220 of MSR Cast, your heavy metal podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek.
I'm Sean the Metal Pigeon.
It's been a while, man.
That's been a while.
Man, and what a pompous, epic way to start the episode.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, Mirith, or Don't Do Anything by Half, that's for sure.
They do not. And neither are we tonight. We are drinking.
Yeah, we got some drinks, a nice little chocolate whiskey.
So yeah, the show might get a little weirder as we progress.
Yeah. Well, we should give people a heads up. This is going to be kind of a longer episode.
It will be.
Because we've been gone for so long. And it's not only because we've been gone for so long, because there have been times where there's been like a month gap between episodes, and we try not to let that happen, but there's been – this time it was unavoidable, but there was so much stuff that happened in between the last time we put out an episode and
that's true.
Now.
That's very true.
Music-wise, event-wise.
Life-wise.
Life-wise, all that kind of stuff. So we have a lot of stuff to talk about this time. I'm pumped. I'm ready for it.
Let's do it. So let's talk about Mirath.
Yeah.
New album.
Yeah. I mean – I loved the last record, Legacy, so much. It made my top 10 that year. And it had been 5 years since they had done the one before that. That was Tales of the Sands in 2011. So my theory, and I think I kind of mentioned this when I wrote the review at themetalpigeon.com, was that when you have a band putting out an album after a long layover, chances are that album was going to be different. Not all the time, but a lot of times it's going to be different because they've had a lot more time to change the writing process, you know, want to try new
right.
things. When you have an album like this, Shaheli is only 3 years removed from Legacy, not minus the time they toured on that album. It's probably going to sound a lot like the last one because they just haven't had that much time to adapt.
And it does.
And it sounds pretty identical to the last one. Not in a bad way, but in a way where it's like almost guaranteed that they can't replicate the success of the last one artistically. I thought, like, I enjoyed this album a lot and I listened to it a lot. It's not as on the same level as Legacy.
That it's not their legacy?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that it's a bad album, though. I actually think it's pretty good.
They're from Tunisia, is that correct?
Yeah. I think a lot of these guys live in France, though.
No, really?
I know two of them still live in Tunisia. One of them is like a music instructor there. The other guy, the drummer, has like a drumming school there or something.
Hmm.
And I think some of the other guys live in France, because I know they recorded some of their stuff in France and they go back and forth and stuff. So,
they've never toured America, have they?
No.
They played like Prog Power, I feel like they played maybe once, or they are playing.
Maybe they might be playing. I know that they're trying to do more touring on this album. Their goal is like, we want to do this full time, like, you know, leave the day jobs behind.
I want to see them tour with Orphanland.
Yeah, that would be the dream.
I mean, that's
right there.
That's the bill right there, you know.
I imagine, I mean, because they've already done that before. They've already toured in Europe, those two bands
yeah,
together.
Yeah, I imagine so.
So, The only problem is I don't think either of those bands is set up to headline the United States right now. But that could change with this album. So, I mean, I think Mirath have been getting more buzz on this album than ever before. And a lot of it is like...
Buzz? Where are they getting the buzz?
From like major... like Metal Hammer in Germany had them on the cover and stuff like that. And
very cool.
That's a big deal. And they're getting more traction and more interviews in different places. Like websites I've seen that wouldn't cover them in the past are kind of...
Now
like,
we're playing them.
Well, yeah, and you know we've been fans of them for a while, so
we have indeed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this song "Wicked Dice" that we played, it's my favorite song on the album because I like because it really keys on something they do well, which is the thing I love when I listen to this band is I love the Arabic stuff, I love all of the Middle Eastern melodies and stuff like that, but I really like it when this band just goes for that dramatic punch. I don't need this band to be super heavy. I don't need them to be like complicated. Just give me that emotional kind of punch.
When they first started, they were definitely more complicated, proggy.
Oh yeah, especially like the first two albums were very much like I would say more prog than anything. And Tales of the Sands is where they really started incorporating all the other stuff. You know, like
we were just talking about the new Aladdin soundtrack, and these guys would fit right on with Aladdin.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. We've talked about their videos before.
Yeah.
Because they're so over the top and stuff.
So Prince of Persia.
I think that for the budget they're working with, they do as good a job as they can. I think they kind of went overboard with this last video they put out where they're like fighting some snake monster in the desert. It's like, okay, guys, just settle down. What if you took one of these songs and you just like shot like real footage of you guys in Tunisia and the landscape around there and just kind of juxtapose it together?
You know what else was shot in Tunisia?
What's this?
Tatooine.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd believe that. I think that I would like to see them, at least in the future, head into a more keep the sound the way it is, but maybe get a little grittier sometimes, you know? Because I do think that they kind of run the risk if they keep on – if they do another one of these albums in the same vein of Legacy and Shelley, you could run the risk of, like, starting to tread water. And I don't want to see them ever do that. So, like, change it up, get a little heavier, lean a little bit in a certain direction, or do something else entirely. Do something more slower, stripped down, but shake it up for the next time. I'm okay with this album being very close to Legacy. Next time, I think they got to do something else. But yeah, everyone should go check it out, because it's this band is amazing, and they deserve all the success they're getting right now. So
Mirass. What's the name of the album?
Shahili. Yeah, Shahili.
So do you want to just get into the next band, and we'll talk about some stuff after we get back?
Yeah. Yeah.
You ready for a riot?
I'm ready for a riot, and these guys are the band to bring it.
In the city?
Yeah, Riot City.
Tell me who these guys are.
They're from Alberta, Calgary, and just another one of these bands coming out from Canada. They're just somehow on their first or second album. They're awesome. These guys, this is their debut. These guys are like if you took like Priest, you know, Painkiller era Priest with a little bit of the older era Priest, mixed it with like a splash of like Exciter. And you get Riot City, because it's just like just wild, kind of like unrestrained, uncontrolled, like speed metal with some like real kind of thrashy elements to it. And it just
even
sounds,
the album cover, man, it's very Judas Priest. It's
completely
a mechanical bird.
It's a mechanical bird.
Come on,
yeah, yeah. It's
wearing their influences on their sleeve. As they say,
it's the cover for what was it? Screaming
for Vengeance.
Yeah, Vengeance. Yeah, and it's just the bird from a different angle, almost.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it looks
this
like.
This is a close up of the bird.
It's not as yellow background.
Yeah, I mean, I think the vocalist is great. He has this way of apparently it's a 4-piece band too, and so he's doing guitar and vocals at the same time, which is amazing. Because when you hear these guys, it's like, well, that seems like. This is like a frontman type of vocal performance, you know?
That's difficult to do.
In fact, I was just listening to this yesterday, like driving home. I was just kind of like, I shouldn't be listening to this when I'm driving. This is just very speed inducing. And I was like 10 miles over the speed limit. So I switched it over to like Ashbury, which we're going to play later. This is just, again, that same vein of like modern traditionalist power metal that's coming out from North America that everyone should be in on the ground floor on. And these guys have such a buzz behind them right now that if you don't know about them now, and well, if you didn't know about them before the show, everyone around you will probably know about them by the end of the year.
That seems to be the key word of this episode so far is buzz.
Buzz, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
All right. We'll be right back.
back from the Mediterranean. Stormlord. Album Far? Or is that just abbreviated?
No, that's it. Far.
You know what's funny? We're going to play a band in a minute here, a few minutes, that reminded me of like this kind of like mix of folk metal with an extreme subgenre.
Extreme, epic, symphonic, folk, black metal.
Yeah, and kind of merging sort of in a way that's...
Power metal.
Because they have a little bit of that power metal thing going on, too. And doing it in a way that's not... Corpicolani-ish, you know, to be blunt about it.
It's not about drinking mead.
If anyone who's read me, what I write for the past couple of years knows that I hate that kind of stuff in folk metal in particular. So when it comes to stuff like this, I'm like, it kind of hits me in that sweet spot of like what I love about folk metal and the potential of folk metal, with that particular kind of sound, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I like that. It was a good blend of stuff, particularly in the fact that like the melody wasn't lost beneath all the, you know, beneath the heaviness and
extremity.
Stuff.
Yeah. So the band is called Stormlord. They are from Italy. This is
hence the Mediterranean.
Yeah, they're sixth full length, but they've been around for about 20 years, yeah. 20+ years. Yeah, I dig them a lot, and I like this album. This whole album is really, really good.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend checking out Far. I haven't dove back into their, previous releases yet, but
yeah.
I think I will.
You just got a promo for these guys?
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
I really dig them.
Yeah. These bands that have been around for, like, all this time, and
right?
You just stumble upon them now, and you're like, man, you guys have been around, like Hellevorn.
Yeah.
You know, like, earlier in the year, it was like... Oh, wow.
This band names you've heard, but maybe you've never taken the time to listen to.
Yeah.
Like this. You mentioned, wasn't this Eric Peterson's band? No, that's Dragon Lord.
Yeah. You know,
close.
Yeah.
That's probably...
Because in my mind, it was like Stormwitch, you know? Like Stormwitch is a classic band. And it's like, I know I've seen this somewhere. It's like, eventually these names just... You know, there's like, if you go on Metal Archives, there's 10 other bands named Visigoth. So like, all
and you're wearing a Visigoth shirt right now.
Yeah, I'm wearing, which we'll tell the tale of in a bit. There's all these names sort of run together after a while, and it's always staggering to me that like as deep as we're in this genre and just metal in general, like regardless of subgenre, how you can stumble upon a band like Hellevorn, who I didn't even know existed. I'd never seen that name before February or January, and then it's just like, how this band elude me for all these years? You know, it's weird.
There's just so many bands.
Yeah.
And we strive to discover new bands and let people know about it.
Yeah.
Even if a new band to us is an old band to you, but yeah. there might be still people out there who've never heard it.
I'd like to think there's someone out there going, yeah, Stormlord,
motherfuckers, what up? I've been listening to them for 15 years. Yeah. What's up with you? Slackers.
Yeah.
We catch up finally sometimes.
Yeah, better late than never, I guess.
So let's take this opportunity. Let's talk about the first band. Then we're going to take this opportunity to talk about a couple of concerts that we've seen. We're going to move in the back end here. We're going to move a couple things around on our end.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Riot City, and we're going to go into your Riot City in Houston show.
Well, you know, the Riot City, the vocalist. I was trying to make some kind of
segue there. It didn't work.
His name is Kale Savvy.
What is it?
Kale Savvy.
Okay.
Which I thought was a strange name. But yeah, he does like...
Savvy?
He's playing guitar and doing the vocals. And I was mentioning to you when we were listening to him, I was like, I want to see this guy live to see if he's going to pull this off live.
Now, my first opinion on the band name doesn't fit the band. Riot City feels very much like a punk band.
Yeah, okay, I could see that.
Just by the name alone. It's say, hey, have you heard Riot City? I'm like, oh, it sounds I've never heard this punk band before.
Yeah.
But these guys are totally different than that.
Yeah.
My first listen, to me, it sounds like late 80s Hellstar. Gang vocals.
Right, yeah.
The guy hitting the fucking notes like crazy. Dual guitar wheel, like, notes. Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a song later on the album, right? It might be the song like right after that one, where he does a very clean, kind of cold toned voice.
Yeah,
it sounds exactly like Rob Halford on like mid period '80s Rob Halford, that kind of,
or even point of entry type.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, like his kind of smooth, cold voice on like Out in the Cold or Blood Red Skies and stuff like that, you know.
Gotcha.
This guy can emulate that voice, and I'm not saying that he's a total copy, because sometimes I think like I get a little Metal Church vibe in that vocal too.
I didn't hear that yet. But are you talking about like Mike Howe? Like the raspiness to it?
No, I don't think. Well,
David Wayne.
Wayne.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think. Yeah, but you know, regardless of all the influences that I hear in the music, they put out a great record. The record is just fun to listen to. It's just a blast. I think their challenge going forward is going to be like, do you continue doing that, or do you try to change who you are and what? Because there's a band, we're not going to play them on the show, but I think it's worth talking about that new Enforcer record.
Mm-hmm.
And how, I'm not going to criticize it, but how just how utterly bizarre it is. Like, if you're familiar with Enforcer.
I have not listened to it yet.
I mean, you know Enforcer.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And when you listen, you think of that name, you hear that identifiable sound.
Do they have a song in Spanish on this album or something like that?
They recorded it in Spanish, the entire album, but the English version exists, you know, okay. Also. But the thing is, like, it's almost like what they did was all the experiments that they kept off all their other albums, they collected them all on this one album. And it's just like every song is just utterly bizarre in terms of like being relative to their classic sound. They only have one song on the album that sounds like an Enforcer song.
Hmm.
And so I was listening to this going, you know, I like this, but whoa, what are you guys doing?
Feels like a solo album type of deal. When bands do solo, I'm going to take off and do a solo album, which is completely different from the norm.
Yeah, it's a strange album.
But it's the band.
There's stuff I like on it a lot. And I don't know how to explain it. I wrote a review about when my review was really just that I was just baffled by the album, you know?
So I'm going to go into a segue here, talk about the show, your show experience. I think Riot City is a band that would fit well on the concert that you went to.
Oh, yeah.
Do you agree?
Absolutely. That was a crazy show.
Let's talk about it.
That was Hell's Heroes April 13th.
I was unable to attend. I was knee deep in preparation for my job.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking you're out of town, but you were just at work entire time. Yeah,
yeah.
That was a crazy show. I got there. It was a festival that started in the late afternoon. I thought I got there late, relative to everything else. No, I didn't. I got there at 5:30. I walked in the door at 5:30. Looked at my phone. I was like, okay, I'm setting in for the long haul here. I stayed till about 1 a.m. I didn't think I had that in me, honestly, at this point. Because the last time I had spent that long at a show was at another metal festival in Houston. And I swore that would be like the last one. But this one was just so much fun. There were so many good bands. The venue it's at is White Oak Music Hall. It's a really – it's becoming kind of a prestigious venue in Houston.
Yeah.
Not only for its
it was
located,
upstairs and downstairs, right? So they have
both stages, yeah.
Two stages there, yeah.
Upstairs, downstairs. There was a food truck outside. There was like just like a merch alley, like right next to the food truck outside, where all the bands were set up. All these other distros were set up, and like hawking T-shirts and stuff, and people sitting in between the tables eating barbacoa and stuff like that. And it was a fun vibe. It was like one of the most like joyful concert experiences I've experienced. Scene because everyone was really friendly to each other, and I went upstairs first. When I walked in, there was I can't remember who was playing when I walked in, but I was like, oh, I'm gonna go check out upstairs because I've never been upstairs in that venue,
right?
And I went up, and this band called Bat was about to start playing. I was unfamiliar with Bat, but apparently everyone else was, because everyone piled upstairs, and the room upstairs is like maybe 100 odd people could fit comfortably. I swear to God, there was like 500 people trying to get into that one room. And I'm just in the back, literally by the sound guy, just kind of like taking it all in, kind of bemused, holding the beer, trying not to spill it on myself, and people were just pressing up against me. It was – I'm in the back of the room, and I'm like crunched next to the soundboard. Like, all right.
And small, like, small room. Yeah, I've been there.
Extremely tiny, and just everyone went nuts for that band. It was like this three-piece kind of punkish – crazy, you know, speed metal type stuff, and just this pit was going, and people were just bumping into each other, and there were people who were like off to the right of me who were like freaked out by how crowded the room was getting, and they were like trying to squirm their way out, and it was like you could not get out because the amount of people spilling into that room was so ungodly that eventually it just stopped. Like, traffic just stops on the highway, and they no one could actually fit in the room anymore. That's how crazy it got. And I was just like, whoa, this is intense. And there were people were pitting, and there was crowd surfing. It was insane.
Wow.
And downstairs, I should add, this was a no barricade show. So people were just jumping on the stage, running off and just flying off in the audience.
I've never actually seen a show at the downstairs stage.
Really?
Yeah, I've only been there once, and that was for Ocean of the Slumber.
And they played,
and
they
played upstairs.
Yeah, I mean, and I was in the crowd a little bit for Razor, and Razor were like, there were just people running up on the stage, running off and flying off, and the guy was like, this one guy came pretty close to landing right on top of me. He landed on the guy next to me, and I was like, all right, I'm out of here. I'm gonna swing to the back and I'll just enjoy it from the back. It was insane down there. The pit was going. It was one of the most chaotic. But again, no one was getting hurt. Everyone was really cooperating. People were picking each other up. And I got to see two bands that I really wanted to see upstairs. I got to see Cauldron. Thankfully, the room was less dense for that.
Oh, yeah.
Cauldron was great. But the band that stole the night for me was, of course, Visigoth.
They stole your heart?
They did, man. Because they – and it seemed like there were so many people who just came to that show just to see them. Like the excitement. Like I had this one guy ran up into the room. Visigoth is about, they're like setting up. He's like panting. I'm like by the door with our friend Matt Ryan, who is totally amped to see Visigoth. He helped Visigoth up the stairs with their gear. He was like helping them. Yeah. And he actually bought me this shirt. He was so excited about them. Because I was like, I ran out of money. He's like, no, I'm buying you a shirt. You got to support the band. I'm like, all right.
That totally sounds like the dude.
So anyway, I'm standing by there by the door. This guy runs in. He's panting. He's like, oh, did Visigoth play yet? I'm like, no. He's like, oh, thank God. He's like, he had just gotten off of work, and he just hauled over to get there. And Visigoth Live, one of the best live bands I've ever seen.
Wow.
Just every member exudes passion. Jake Rogers is maybe the best frontman in metal right now. Unbelievable voice, unbelievable charisma, stage presence. They have it all. That band should be bigger than they are. And hopefully they will be. They are so good. I felt so grateful to see them now, because in that kind of small venue, and I bumped into them later outside because Matt pulled me like, and he's like, hey, this is Visigoth. I'm like, yeah, I know. And got to meet them, and they were just like, they were cool, and I think they were really taken aback by how well they were received at that show, because people didn't want them to leave. They had to, you know, they had like a time limit on their set. It was like, they only get to play for 30 minutes.
Yeah. With all these bands playing, what were the time limits on these bands?
Yeah, really like 30, 35 minutes for the upstairs bands, because it was just had to keep moving because they wanted to stagger it. So downstairs would kind of be finishing as the upstairs band started. So people could kind of catch some of both.
Yeah.
So like halfway through Visigoth sets, we got this rush of people grinding upstairs. It's like, you guys should have been here from the start, you know?
Who else was great for you that night?
Exciter.
Yeah.
Exciter almost stole the show for me because it was Daniel Decay, who is the guy on the Banger channel. He was
Banger TV, right?
That was their first gig with him as a guitarist.
Oh, first gig.
First gig.
Wow.
And he was super excited. And, I ran into him in the hall earlier and, kind of like, you know, high-fived and whatever, and he was just amped up, and he was like kind of the front man for the band because the other guys were just kind of like, just let this guy talk. And he was kind of just overjoyed to be there, and he was great for that band, and they are so good, and those songs are so perfect for that setting. It was a real like heavy metal like celebration that night. Every band was just kind of like this is not about being harder than anyone else. It's just kind of like togetherness, you know? They were great. I mean, and he later on during Power Trip, Daniel Dekay was like doing like, you know, stage diving and in the pit with everyone else. It was great. You
Did you talk to him about Banger TV or anything like that?
No. I just briefly met him in the hall. Priya Panda was there too, who's like buddies with him. And I guess she came with him to the show just to kind of like support and stuff.
Is she from that? From Banger TV as well? Or?
She was on the glam metal episode. She's in the band.
Right.
She's in the glam rock band. I can't remember the name of the band right now, but I was just like, kind of like, wow, there's like celebrities and shit here and stuff, you know, like metal celebrities and stuff to me. So that was weird to see them. Yeah, you would just like, people would just be like hanging out. Like the bands were all hanging out. Like there was a big green room back there somewhere and like, one of the guys in Visigoth was like, no one's really in the green room. Everyone's just kind of hanging out outside. It was like a really cool feeling gig. Just like everyone was kind of just, there was no barrier. The funniest thing happened during Razor. These guys are a Canadian band.
Yep.
But I think one of the guys is from New York. A lot of these guys were, yeah, Canadian. But their guitarist, I think, was like this New York dude. Someone ran up on stage, ran around behind the bassist to go and do a stage dive. And I guess they must have inadvertently knocked over his beer when they did it, and he got super pissed about this. And so he's just like, he thought that someone grabbed his beer and drank it. He's like, whoever stole my beer and is drinking it, I hope you choke on it or whatever. It's like, dude, I think someone just knocked it over. Maybe your roadie like picked up the can or something.
How was Hellstar in the hometown on this big
show? Oh, yeah, tour? They were great.
Big show.
Yeah. I had to miss some of them because they were at the same time that Cauldron was going. Mm. So I only caught like the last couple songs from them. Who else was there? Omen?
Yeah.
They were good. In fact, I kind of missed some of them. I think they were playing when I got in there. Power Trip was fun.
I've seen Power Trip before.
They were fun.
I saw them open up for Anthrax one time.
Because I was so tired by it. It was like they didn't go on in past midnight or like almost towards midnight. And I was so exhausted. I'm like, okay, I'll just stay for a couple songs of Power Trip and I'm going to leave. I stayed for the entire set.
Wow.
Because it was also like April 14th is my birthday. This show is happening April 13th. And I was like thinking to myself, like, I'm going to be another year older. I don't want to start this year off, this birth year off, like, I'm too old. I want to go home and go to sleep. So I made myself stay. I'm like, no, you're going to stay.
Right?
So, I birthday happened, and I was, like, watching Power Trip. I'm like, yep, this is good. I'm proud of myself for sticking. I was exhausted. It was exhausting. 5:30 to freaking 1 a.m., yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it was exhausting.
I saw a great show, too.
Yeah.
I flew out to California.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So this is one of those bucket list bands for me, basically. I never thought I would see them live. So we flew out to Anaheim to see Avantasia at the – I'm trying to remember the name of the – do you remember the name of the club?
Something, the Grove?
Yeah, the Grove at City Grove at yeah. National at Anaheim or something.
Yeah, whatever they call wooden names.
It's in the same parking lot as where the baseball team plays.
Right, yeah.
So, and luckily there was no game going on the night of the show.
Yeah,
so,
lucky, yeah.
You pay like $10 for parking or whatever it was, and
right.
Parking was like right in front of the building. We got there maybe an hour or two before it was supposed to start.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting. You'll find this fun. I took a picture with this dude. This couple that were behind us in line. They flew from maybe Oregon or maybe Portland. I can't remember exactly. We're talking about metal and talking about podcasting and stuff. And he's like, I was like, yeah. So we're from Houston. We do a podcast. He's like, oh, one of the bloggers that I love is from Houston. I was like, oh yeah, who's that? He's like, the Metal Pigeon. I'm like, you're shitting me. Really? Yeah, that cool. Dude. That dude, no, it was really
that
cool
guy
though.
Sucks.
That guy, that douche, really? No, it was really cool. So we took a picture and sent it to you.
Yeah.
I was like, look, I found your fan. he was really cool. We actually hung out with him during the show a little bit too.
Yeah.
But they were there the same thing we were doing. They came to see Avantasia and they spent a couple of days at Disneyland.
Were you
all metalhead to do.
Were you wearing your Metal Geek shirt? I was wondering.
I was, but I was wearing my battle jacket too.
Because I told the guys of the Powerful Podcast were there.
Yeah.
And I was like, look for a guy in a Metal Geeks shirt. I'm pretty sure he's wearing that. I just kind of took a stab in the dark. Because one of them was like, hey, isn't your friend here? Like, you know, what's he wearing? I'm like, maybe
you
a Metal Geeks.
You should have like introduced us beforehand. We could have like met up with him. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I know. Yeah.
Shameful. but the fucking show was amazing.
Yeah.
So we got in there. The first thing we did is we got in line for merch because I didn't want to be the guy leaving the show and go, I want to buy a shirt. Oh, we only have like a medium. Well, it doesn't fucking help me. I'm a, you know, it doesn't fit me.
Right.
So we got in line first of all. And it's weird. This theater, there's different tiers. I would imagine some shows they usually have chairs and stuff like that, but this took all the chairs out. So there's like tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four, and tier five. And each one a little bit higher than the other. So tier one, which we bought tickets for, was like right in front of the stage. And luckily I got a spot leaning up on one of the rails on the side where the stairs were. And man, they did a 3-hour show. We spent about 2.5 hours in that spot before we finally like, all right, we are getting old. My back is killing me. Let's go to the back area where it's not as crowded for a while.
You were also walking around before the entire day, right?
Like, we were, yeah. We were at Disneyland all day.
Right. Okay, yeah, that's exhausting.
Yeah, yeah, that in itself is exhausting. Yeah, you're right. Holy crap, dude. Okay, this show, we watched some bootleg videos before we recorded. Nothing will prepare you for seeing Avantasia live.
Yeah.
Tobias, as they called him, Toby, he has such a stage commandment.
Yeah.
He's just like, you're just like eating out of his hand. He was sick too. You could tell he was coughing between words and between lines, but he powered through this like a motherfucker, man. And the lineup of this band on this tour was pretty epic.
Yeah, the Powerful Podcast, the guys in the Powerful Podcast, they did like an impromptu episode like right after that show, and they
should have. Yeah,
they were mentioning that he was, you know, he was like ill, and it's like they had done three shows in like three separate continents or something like that.
Yeah, they played the night before in San Jose, which is Northern California, and then they came down. It was so weird to be there and then be like, all right, Anaheim, California. I'm like, oh yeah. We're not in Houston for the show. This is weird.
That would be weird, yeah.
So the tour lineup was on vocals, we had Jorn Lande. Holy crap. Never thought I'd see Jorn live. Mm. There's a guy behind me and right behind me, and he was like on tier two, like the front of the part. He had a homemade shirt that said Jorn fucking Lande. He saw it one time. He's like, yeah, fuck yeah, that shirt. It was pretty great. He has a weird stage performance. He's very Aussie-like when he's on stage.
Yeah.
He had sort of shorter hair at this point. It was just very interesting to see him live.
Yeah.
And I asked my wife, do you know who that is? She's like, no. So I showed her on my phone. She's like, holy shit.
Yeah. He looks different.
Yeah, he does. Bob Catley from Magnum.
Yeah.
Dude is like in his like early 70s and fucking killing it. And he's
amazing
short little English motherfucker, but amazing voice.
Yeah.
Ronnie Atkins was also there from Pretty Maids.
Mm-hmm.
Killer vocalist. Eric Martin, dude. Mr. Big.
Right.
When this dude has the right material in front of him, he's a fantastic vocalist. And he's weird, though. If you ever watched any of the like live like Blu-ray, like the Avantasia Blu-ray they put out,
right?
This dude is a little wacky, but it's fun.
Yeah,
he's definitely very an interesting person. Jeff Tate was also on stage,
right?
I gotta tell you, man, I was a little worried about Jeff Tate.
I heard he killed it.
He fucking killed it.
Yeah.
He commanded that stage when he got up and did his stuff. He did multiple songs, and he was on point, man.
Yeah.
Now, what I liked, we'll get to the band part. What I liked about what Tobias would do is there were certain times where Toby would leave the stage and let the vocalist, the other vocalist, be the front man for a little bit.
Right, yeah.
So they would do the banter between songs, and they would talk about the next song, and then Toby would, you know, meander back out on stage and sit down, and they would, he would, other people like Jeff Tate would talk about the song, and I thought that was fucking super cool.
Yeah.
It's like these guys weren't just hired vocalists to be on stage. They're actually part of the band.
Right, yeah.
And that's such a different experience than most bands of this that would do something like this.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we have a special vocalist, you know, for this song. That's it, you know?
Right, yeah.
Backup vocalist dude, Herbie Langhams.
Yeah.
Advance.
Yeah, he great. Great singer.
And Adrienne Cowan.
Mm-hmm.
She, Cowan?
Yeah, something like that.
She's done a lot of stuff. And wasn't she discovered by like YouTube or something like that?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And then guitar player, you had Oliver Hartman. Mm-hmm. Both two on stuff.
Yeah, a great singer. As anyone who has listened to Advance's cover of Eye of the Tiger can attest to.
Yep, and his solo band too, Hartman.
Right, yeah.
Then we had Sasha Pace on guitars. And Felix Bonke from, of course, from Med Guy,
right.
The drum player.
Yeah.
Drum player. Yeah, he played those drums.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal show, dude. Every song you would want them to play, they played. They played the entirety of the new album. Not in sequential order, which I was sort of appreciative of, like, because that sort of gets boring, you know? Like, here's the new album, and here's some other stuff.
Right, yeah.
I sort of like how they mixed it up a little bit.
Yeah, it's smart, yeah.
And they played Farewell at the end of the show and
classic.
Man, the last song they did, they had every single vocalist up on stage performing live.
Yeah.
It was epic.
Yeah.
Epic, dude.
Yeah. That's such a unique experience it must have been, because like, you know, the thing with like, and they also, and, you know, you're saying that he's going off stage and stuff. That's not the way it was in 2008. And you watch that DVD for the Flying Opera.
Right.
It's, I mean, Toby is the MC throughout the entire gig, mostly because he's just present on all those songs also. But the fact is, I think, you know, having guys like Jeff Tate and Herbie Langhans and more confidence in people like Oliver Hartman and Sasha Pate to be like this band unit. Yeah. I think he feels
Oliver Hartman was definitely a vocal part of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even between songs and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, him being sick probably allowed him to be like, all right, I can take a breather in between. And
sure.
Don't have to worry about the show going off the rails. These guys are professional front men. They can keep it together. And after hearing your take on that and hearing the Powerful Podcast take on it, I think that like Jeff Tate, this has made him like, it's not made him, but it's more like, wow, he's still really good. He still has it. He just needs collaborators that bring out the best in him.
I think so.
And he doesn't have that with the Operation Mindcrime project he's doing.
Yeah.
I think all those guys just like, I'm not trying to be mean, but they just suck. They sound bad live. They don't know how to write songs. Like Tate, like we all know what Jeff Tate can do when he has someone like Chris DeGarmo writing for him. I mean, masterpieces.
And I think a lot of the thing is, yeah, you're right. It's even the later day Queensryche stuff he was on, the band had changed so much in a certain way. And it wasn't really his register anymore.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, especially those later day Queensryche albums where he was like American Soldier and Dedicated to Chaos and all that kind of crap. It's like he had outside songwriters like Jason Slater and Randy Gain, all these guys like who are part of his solo band now, helping him. And it's like, you need like, and you get, then you get Tobias Sammet writing for you and you're in that show and all of a sudden you're like finding a range you haven't hit in years. And it's like, you sound younger than ever. It's like been a little mini renaissance for him. And I hope he can kind of parlay this into something else, like productive, you know?
I agree.
So
I was totally impressed with Jeff Tate.
Yeah.
And I highly expected me to go in going, oh, yeah, well, Jeff Tate.
And someone was saying this is like, he's around this caliber of talent around him that makes him go like, oh, I got to step it up. Like, I can't just like sail through like another performance of Eyes of a Stranger or something. I have to like compete with these guys, you know?
So let's take a moment and get into some Advantageous, something from the brand new album. We've only played one song, I think, before. The album's called Moonglow.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, I have a new respect for this album after seeing it performed live.
Yeah.
At some point in my listening experiences, I was getting so not bored, but there's a certain word I can't think of the word. This, you know, complacent maybe to the album.
Yeah.
Newfound love for this album. It's a really great album.
Yeah.
When like the part where Mille from Creator is on the song, it was Adrienne Cowan doing these heavy vocals. Dude, she was fucking heavy.
Yeah.
She was doing growls and like, and even Tobias was like, oh my God. And then she goes into like beautiful stuff like Lost in Space and like right. her other stuff that she was doing.
Yeah.
Phenomenal vocalist, man.
I respect him for still putting out Lost in Space, like putting it in the set list.
You have to. You
I mean, I remember the controversy when that song came out in 08, just the rabid anger from power metal fans about that song. And I think I give him credit for sticking to his guns. I think he's written infinitely better songs in that vein. But I think the fact that he still puts that song in the set list is like, I think it's worthy of respect. It's like you stand behind it.
I've always liked that song and I always will like that song.
Personally, I love it. That's in my wheelhouse, but yeah. I know it pissed people off. I think that, the song from Mystery of Time is better. I can't remember the name right now, but it was like the video, Sleepwalking. I thought that was a beautiful song in that kind of poppy vein.
And there's stuff on the new album that's in that vein.
Yeah,
Moonglow for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love that stuff. I could eat it up.
So let's get into some Avantasia. This is the Book of Shallows from Moonglow. And just imagine Adrienne Cowan singing the Creator parts.
Yeah. Let you in.
Welcome back to the show, my friend. Dark Throne, man.
Yeah.
The new album is called Old Star, The Hardship of the Scots album.
This is pretty cool. This is a surprising choice coming from you.
I've never been a huge Dark Throne fan.
Right.
I mean, I like them, but I've never been a huge fan.
Right,
but.
Yeah. Yeah, I've only gotten to hear the album in its entirety once through. It's still... I need to give it way more attention.
Mm-hmm.
My immediate... this Epic Death cover is very distracting. Yeah, turn this over. My immediate feeling on the album
But wait a minute.
is that it's infinitely better than Arctic Thunder, which, weirdly enough, I forgot even existed. That's how kind of... That album kind of sits with
when
me
When was
now.
That?
15, I think, 2015 or 16.
Was that the last
16.
Album?
16. That was the last album. In my mind, I was like, oh, yeah, it's been a while since we had a new Dark Throne album, like 2013, Underground Resistance. It's like, no, there was one in between there, and I just sort of haven't listened to it since it came out. So immediately, I'm more into this.
Me too.
It's hooky. It's kind of got that... that little thing I like about Dark Throne, just sort of the weird, like, left field hooks they kind of have in these songs,
right.
You know?
I think the band owes a little bit of money to Bruce Dickinson here, though, for the song.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
When I first heard the song, I'm like, okay, this reminds me, it's a Bruce Dickinson song, I know that much. Couldn't pinpoint what it was. I finally figured it out. The last minute or two of The Dark Side of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
Is this main intro hook riff on this song. Yes. Dark Throne's a little bit slower and doomier version of it, but it's the fucking same hook.
Yeah.
What? Somebody needs to mix these two together, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think Fenriz owes Bruce a beer or something.
He does, man, for sure. It's a good song, though. It was definitely a good song when Bruce did it.
Yeah.
Now it's even a good song still.
It's a good riff.
It's a good riff.
Do it twice, yeah.
And before that was a little band called Aventasia from the album Moonglow called Book of Shallows. Now, we just talked all about the trip to California, to Anaheim to see Aventasia, and you wanted to talk a little bit about what we've been up to. We want a little geeky few minute break here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which leads me into my trip to Disneyland.
Go for it.
Had a phenomenal time. Mm-hmm. We spent like 4.5 days there. Had a great hotel, which was walking distance, had free parking and a breakfast buffet and everything you could expect out of a...
All the carbs.
All the carbs. Yeah. Well, a little bit.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad. I ate more eggs and stuff like that, but there was some intake of carbs on this trip.
Yeah.
I will say, we talked about this on the Metal Geeks, my favorite new discovery of a treat at Disneyland is something called the Loaded Whip. You know, the Dole Whip, which is the soft serve pineapple ice cream from Dole.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a Loaded Whip there at this new area of Disneyland called, what's it called? Tropical Hideaway. And what it is, it's Dole Whip, it's orange and pineapple Dole mixed together in a bowl with fresh fruit at the bottom. So, like, you know, mango and papaya and pineapple all cut up into small pieces, really fresh. And then it has coconut flakes, crystallized hibiscus,
wow,
and then pocky sticks.
Like
the chocolate-covered pocky sticks?
Yeah.
This thing's fucking phenomenal, dude. I know it's not very metal, but I fucking loved it. We had one like every day of the trip.
Nice. Yeah.
It was amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that was my favorite thing. We missed Disneyland's opening of Star Wars, the Galaxy's Edge, by like a week.
Yeah.
We were walking by, and they were doing like cast member preview, where it's like, oh, let me in.
Yeah, but, I saw that like all over the news the other day, like – all this coverage about it. Looks intense.
Yeah. I think the first day was the 31st.
Yeah.
The first official opening day.
Right.
We've been watching a lot of YouTube videos on it. But you know that thing we always talk about? When you're at a metal show and you do somebody you don't know, you don't really talk to them, right?
Right.
But when you're in a place that's not metal,
And you meet that
you meet that guy, and you're like, you're my new best friend. We we met a couple people. The first person that we saw that was a metalhead, we were ending our ride on Pirates of the Caribbean. So the run there, the ride actually come through like the line a little bit, which is a little weird. And there's a dude in line wearing a fucking insect warfare hoodie. We're like, insect warfare. And he turned around and was like, what the fuck? How did somebody know that? We met a dude at the Tiki Room that was from like Las Vegas, who was like a metalhead.
Yeah.
And then we met a dude like second to last day we were there. He got put right – him and his wife got put right next to us on Star Tours. And he was wearing a fucking battle jacket. Had a lot of some Disney stuff on it. I'm like – You're my new friend.
Hang on a second. Battle jacket, hoodie. What was the? Was it cold out there or something?
It was sort of cold at Disney. It was the high. The week we were there, the highs were like 67, 68.
That's crazy.
It was weird.
Climate change.
Yeah, totally. I only brought like one pair of pants. but it was a fun. So we're gonna actually play his band later. He's the band is called When the Broken Burn.
Cool.
It's he's the vocalist of the band. A guy's named Nick. It's more metalcore than I'm usually used to, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So we're gonna get to that. But that was sort of cool about, you know, that thing about when you meet somebody at Disney. You know that you seen that video where the guys meet at the frozen food section.
Yeah.
The two metalheads, and all of a sudden they're like running to each other in a field.
Well, I was just at that Total Wine store the other day, and I was wearing this Visigoth shirt, and the guy came up to me. He's like, "Oh, was that show?"
Yeah.
He worked there. I was like, "Hey, how's it going?" You know. Yeah.
Metal bringing people together.
Yep.
In weird places.
Weird places.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about? That's geeky.
So in the time we've been gone, heads up. Game of Thrones spoilers, I guess, in the next few minutes.
I haven't watched it yet.
You haven't watched it
yet? I'm joking.
Okay.
Well, yes and no.
Well, we can talk about this without doing spoilers.
Actually, we can a little bit, because I watched the episode. This is weird. After the Avantasia show, we had HBO in our room. We came back to the room. It was midnight already.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, let's watch it. We put on HBO. We don't know what part of the episode it was in. And apparently it was the beginning. And me and my wife are both in and out of sleep watching this episode. So there's parts that I remember, the parts that she remembers, and I got the basic gist of it though.
Yeah.
So we can talk about it.
So what'd you think of just like the entire ending and the season, and what'd you think?
Shot beautifully.
Yeah.
Great acting.
Oh, amazing looking season.
Yeah. Horrible writing.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, 'cause like, all the crazy reaction that happened over the past like 2 weeks or whenever, however long it's been. Mm-hmm. It's like, for me, you know, I appreciate just the entire show for what it is, for that grand entertainment and this kind of monoculture like spectacle of everyone's watching this at the same time. But man, like, you really compressed these last two seasons into something that really didn't need to be compressed that much. Like,
it felt that way.
Just had more episodes, you know?
The seven seasons of character development leading up to the season 8 were phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then characters did stuff out of character in this season. Like, okay, the whole thing, I'm good with Arya killing the Night King.
Right.
I was like, oh, that's the perfect, that's a good... That's where her character should have been leading to, because she was going for revenge the whole show.
Yeah, and it ties in with what the Red Woman was telling her like all those seasons ago. And
and then after she kills him, she becomes a wuss again, because she goes to fight in
King's Landing.
King's Landing, and she sees how bad it is. So she fucking hides and runs away. It's like, dude, you just killed the Night King. What are you doing?
I think she was on her way to kill Cersei, and the Hound is just like, you know, this basically kind of insinuating like, you're not going to leave this building alive if you keep on going through. Get out of here now. I'm okay with all that kind of, all the decision making, like the idea of like Bran ending up like on the throne. I'm okay with all that stuff, because that's kind of like stuff that George R. R. Martin was telling them. What I'm not okay with is them not showing their work to how all this comes together. You know, it's like we've had. Remember in season 3 or 4, like when Mance Rayder was trying to like light the fire that everyone's going to see or whatever, and it took him the entire season and then some to light the fire. And then in this episode, like King's Landing gets burned to the ground, and like we have 3 more scenes with Dany after that, and then it's over. It's like, wait, can we have more time? And it's like, these guys are going to be doing the Star Wars movies, I think, right?
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where it's like real life affected the way the storytelling was going on the show. Like, you know what? We're at the end of season six. We have to wrap this up in like a couple years. So let's just get like 13 episodes together. Let's bring it all to the conclusion. And that's what we're going to
have
to
do. Have you seen that meme, the meme about the maze?
Yeah.
It's like season one, season eight. And it's just like, it goes starting from the maze and then just like a line to the end. Like, I can't do it anymore. I'm just going to cheat and go to the end of the maze. How it felt. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I guess that's what the books are for though.
But he hasn't finished it in the books.
No, I know, but like, you know, like he kind of told them most of the major beats of like major things of like.
I've heard that he wasn't happy with some of the things they did too.
Yeah.
But
I sort of empathize with them of like, man, this is an expensive show. It's a lot to deal with. It's a major thing of like commitment and time. They could have kept going for six more seasons and everyone would have loved it, but
yeah.
Money wise and actor wise and whatever scheduled, I get it. But yeah, it was just like this major event that happened. Like all of Game of Thrones happened between the time we did the last episode and this episode. So it's That's like, true. I want to talk about it a little bit. How was Comic-Palooza?
Comic-Palooza was great. I worked a lot.
Yeah.
But I always find some time to do stuff that I want to do. The main thing that I wanted to do, I wanted to meet the cast of The Tick. I got a poster signed.
Yeah.
I got some books signed by Chris Claremont. Actually, all the three books right there, the Shadow Moon series, mm-hmm. which it was the series he did with George Lucas. It's basically the sequel book series to Willow.
Cool.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
We talked about that a little bit about, you know, there's supposed to be a Disney Plus is doing a Willow series. And he's like, well, look at this. I gave him a lot of stuff to work with. And he was like, you know, like, well, that's true. You did. I also met Jess Harnell from the Animaniacs because he's a bunch of voices in Splash Mountain from Disneyland.
Oh, cool.
And I got him to sign his Splash Mountain poster, and he did like the voices from the attraction and stuff. It was pretty cool.
No running with the Mother of Dragons?
I did not.
Yeah.
No.
It was cool, like publicity for Comic-Palooza that she was like shown at the Rockets game courtside like the night before.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's like, why is she in Houston? It's like, oh, Comic-Palooza in Houston. That's like nice timing. Yeah.
Can't take credit for it, but
yeah, she was there.
It made my job a little easier, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's cool.
I guess the cat's out of the bag. People don't know I am the social media guy for Comic-Palooza.
Yeah.
The digital media manager is what my title is.
Yeah.
So there it is. That's my job. It's fun. It's a lot of work, though. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it just seemed
it
like...
It is.
Because I didn't hear from you for, like, a long time there. And I was just like, man, that guy must be, like, working, like, all day
for a while. I was. We were working, like... I want to say it here, but we did do a live episode of Metal Geeks. So...
Yeah.
Which is really cool, because we have an area... It's something that I started at the show called the podcast program, the Comic-Palooza mm-hmm. Podcast Partnership Program. And we have a 20 by 20 booth on the floor. And this year we made it even better. We had speakers, we had all this shit. And apparently when the Metal Geeks, I just showed up and got everything set up real quickly. And we had a full house. There was like only a couple empty seats. I think you need to come next year, dude. I'm putting you on the spot now.
How many seats?
It was, I'll show you pictures. It's probably like, I don't know, 20, 30 people.
Wow.
This is on the show floor too. And people were standing around.
Wow.
Next year, I'm putting you on the spot. You are coming to Comic-Palooza, and you're going to be on a live episode of Metal Geeks.
All right.
You're no doubt about it. You're there.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of it. I was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, you know, the why podcasting in a situation like that is always like, how many people are just passing by, not knowing what's going on? How many people are actually like, oh, I know these guys. I'm going to sit there.
We did have some of those guys.
Yeah,
we had
that's
both.
Cool. Yeah.
We had some of the podcasters in the audience. You know, the wives are there and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Trying to get George not to cuss was a chore.
Oh, right, because you're on PA and everything, yeah.
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 Listen to the last episode, the episode 163 of the Metal Geeks Live from Comic-Palooza. You'll hear George. You'll hear me get really frustrated a few times.
Oh, no.
Yeah, by some of the things he says. So let's talk about the next band.
Yeah.
Manigarm. Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Has a umlaut somewhere in there, I'm sure.
I don't think so. I think it's just man, or maybe they do, but they've been like, you know, these guys are like folk metal legends in my opinion. They've been around forever. It's been a while since I've been excited by an album of theirs, probably well before 2010, because the last time they released an album was 4 years ago, and I just remember feeling like, actually that album and the album before it just had this weird kind of muddiness in the guitar tone that annoyed me to where I didn't really listen to them. There are good songs in those albums, but I think the sound was just kind of off-putting. And it's nice, you know, going back to that whole thing about Mirath, like, when you take a long time between albums, things will change, and they've kind of gotten away from that muddiness, returned to a more blackened, crisp tone for this new album, and it's like, this is a band that just kind of marries that kind of black metal influence with an overwhelming amount of melody. The vocalist, this guy named Eric Gracio, he is one of the few vocalists in metal who can do like a grim, kind of gruff, extreme metal vocal, but have melody in the vocal as he does it, sort of like Johan Hegg from Amon Amarth. So it's not always just like the guitar is doing the melody, because in folk metal, it's like black metal vocals with all this stuff going on around it. Right. It's like he kind of drives the melody in this band. And like, you know, that with a song at the 3.5 minute mark on Hervor's Arv, like it has that kind of like blast of folk melody, that Scandinavian folk melody of hurdy-gurdies and all that kind of violin stuff. Like I love that. And that's kind of right in my wheelhouse for folk metal. And this album is just loaded with that stuff. And it's just like a fun record to listen to. And yeah, it's good to have this band back doing good stuff. Just another sign that folk metal is resurgent, you know, artistically.
And they're from Sweden?
Yeah.
Is a lot of the stuff in English? Or I know all, this album is, like, the titles are definitely Swedish.
I think they sing in Swedish.
Do they?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure about some of the older records. I'm pretty sure it's all in Swedish. But yeah, they're one of the originators, like one of the pioneers, like that late 90s blast of folk metal that they were one of the first bands. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So let's get into, I'm going to let you say all the titles here.
Oh, Hervor's Arv, the album name, Fornald Arsegor.
What you said.
Whatever that means.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to MSRcast 220.
Thank you.
Finally out of those teens. It took us a while to get out of the teens there. You know, like 211, 212, 213. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about at first. I'm like, wait a minute. Whatever you do outside of the show is your your business.
That was a band from Portland called Tanagra. Song called Sidria off the new album Meridium. I think this is their second album. This has been the most puzzling album band I've heard all year because I like it and then sometimes I don't like it.
Oh.
And I still haven't quite figured it out. Like that's the song we just played, I really enjoyed the riffing and the melody and yeah. The sort of even the keyboard stuff. This band sometimes reminds me of like a better, more suited to my taste Dream Theater, where it's like you get that Euro power influence in there. But the thing is, that guy's voice, Tom Socha is the vocalist. Sometimes I like him, and then sometimes I'm just like, the atonality of your voice is very off-putting to me. And I can't...
This is the only song I've heard from them, so...
Yeah, I mean, he has moments where he can get really gruff, and I'm like, oh, kind of Russell Allen-y, I like this. And then there's just times where his voice is so monotone-ish, and it just bothers me. It's not like I think he's a bad vocalist. It's just he's got a certain tone to his voice that sometimes rubs me the wrong way, but I still can't stop listening to the album. It's something that I've come back to like time and time again, and I enjoy the record, but I just am not sold on him as a singer. And weirdly enough, bringing up the Dream Theater thing, that's kind of how I feel about Dream Theater in general. Of like, I kind of like the new album a lot, and yeah. James, you know, His vocals, you know.
I like James LaBrie still, but yeah, I do agree he's an acquired taste.
Yeah, yeah, acquired taste is probably the... It's kind of like Haikin, you know, like Haikin's vocalist is... I could see how like a lot of people would listen to that and go, no, this guy's not good. And it's like, no, he's good. He's just very...
Different.
Very particular. You have to kind of get used to it. Yeah.
I do like the Alan Lande albums. Those are pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah.
They work well together.
Yeah. Lady of Winter. Great song.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Tanagra is a weird one, but like another new band coming from North America, this time coming out of Portland. Second album. Everyone should go check them out. Just an explosion of new bands. I'm just getting used to it by this point of like, oh, there's another new band. Where are they from? Oh, Utah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
You know?
There is a lot, man.
Yeah.
And it's great that we can try to keep up with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
not so easy.
I'm happy to keep learning about more new bands coming out.
A band that's new for some people might be, but they're not a new band, is Monogarm.
Yeah.
Is that, am I saying it correctly? Monogarm?
Yeah, I think so.
Probably, because there's like a little thing above the A in the name, the first A in the name. So it's probably Monogarm.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this album ends up on my best of list. I've been listening to it quite a bit, yeah. Actually, speaking of, we should talk about that because it's almost exactly the middle of the year.
Almost, yeah. It is. Really.
I was thinking about this, but when we were thinking about like doing, you know, like planning for the show, it's like I don't really want to do like a complete like, oh, what's on your best of so far? Because I think that's kind of giving the game away a little bit and kind of boring. But I got two questions for you.
Okay, and I got hopefully two answers for you.
Okay, the first question is,
yes,
what is the album that you've listened to the most this year? And then the second question is, what is the album that surprised you the most this year, for good or bad?
The album, truthfully, that I've listened to the most is Meadow's End.
Wow. I did not expect that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The album, The Grand Antiquation. Addicted to that album.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. Why weren't you expecting that?
I don't know. I guess I just thought about it'd be something more obvious, like Swallow the Sun or something like that. But
that's high up there too,
right?
But yeah.
But truthfully speaking, it's Meadow's End. Yeah.
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 Right now, what surprised me,
for good or bad?
That's you got me on the spot now. I don't know.
I'll tell you that the album I listened to the most,
okay,
that Thormesis album.
Yeah.
Like, I really can't stop listening to that album. I listen to it to, like, chill out. I listen to it when I'm, like, angry. I listen to it when I'm, like, when I need to, like, wake up and stuff. It's just been a constant thing that I've just... I was looking at my play counts, actually, earlier this week, and that album is... so far above even like Swallow the Sun album and Avantasia, and it came out later. It came out like months after those two.
Thanks to Justin for introducing it to us.
And yeah, and I already know it's going to be on the best of list at this point. It's like, how high is this thing going to get? You know,
that surprises me.
Yeah.
So what's been your surprise, for good or bad?
Well, a good surprise is I didn't think the Swallow the Sun album would be as good as it was, because I thought it's going to be interesting to hear what he has to say post all that stuff happening in his personal life. I didn't expect it to be that emotionally impactful and at the same time, maybe the best songwriting they've ever done.
Agreed.
That really surprised me because I just thought like there are parts of Songs in the North that were I didn't enjoy as much and kind of uneven, especially that second disc was really uneven. This one, they just knocked it out of the park. I mean, this might be the best thing he's ever done. It almost to a point where I think like, oh, it's going to be hard for them to top the next one. And you're going to have that letdown, you know, and that's casting a spur. They haven't even written the next one, but you just kind of go like, how could you possibly top this one? And I had the same feeling with Avantasia. I loved Ghostlight so much. It was my number one album of the year. that I came into Moonglow going,
yeah,
you know, that anticipation wasn't. Yeah,
I'll tell you an album that surprised me, which I didn't think I was going to like as much as I do, is that Bremer album.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Wings of Fire from Bremer.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go back to that album quite a bit.
It was fun. Yeah.
There's a couple parts where I don't like it as much.
Right.
There's just a couple of small parts in the album, be it a vocal style or a riff or something like that. But overall, I really enjoy it.
Do you think at times it was a little too overproduced?
Yes.
That was my feeling.
That's surprised why I like it so much.
No, no, no. It's a strength, but I think sometimes it is like you kind of want it to get dirtier too.
Yeah.
It's like we haven't played it. We're probably not going to play it in the show, but the new Amon Amarth album.
Mm-hmm.
There were moments where they kind of leaned into this old school Swedish death metal. And I'm like, oh, that is what you guys have been missing all these years. You need to go harder in that direction. And they always pull back just before it gets too dirty. And I'm like, no. You guys, it would be so much fun if Amon Amarth just went super brutal,
yeah,
and kept the melody and everything, but marry the two. But they always pull it back, and it's just very predictable. And it kind of made me realize they have some potential with that band to where they can really upgrade their sound, but they're not doing it. A little bit too polished in that sound, a little too produced. And I think the Bremer album has the same little tendency that kind of holds it back.
Now, you're talking about, you know, favorite albums, you know, of course, the usual suspects are going to be there that we'll get to later. You know, we're not going to spoil everything. But
right. Yeah. Yeah.
You're the Devin Townsend and, you know, the Swallow the Sun and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Right.
It's Avantasia. It's always going to – stuff is still high up on my list, you know.
Yeah. I'm going to be interested to see.
Black Therapy, that band too. Really, really good.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Go back to that album a lot.
It's really going to be interesting to see how these year-end lists shape up this time.
Mine might be surprising to you, some people.
I think both of ours are going to be really surprising for all of us, yeah.
Yeah. So let's get to the next band here. This is another one of your picks. Ashbury?
Yeah, these guys.
Am I saying it correctly?
This band has been around for a long time, apparently. They're an old band that had one of those things where they had a career, they kind of fizzled out, they stopped, and then they came back recently and started doing new music. So they have this kind of out of time sound of like, this is like 1974 Uriah Heep.
Yeah, I was thinking
stuff.
Of Uriah Heep, but
I
upon first
stuff.
Listen, the guy sounds way, way too much like James Hetfield to me.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that until you mentioned it, but, and I'm not even sure if I hear it. I see what you're, he doesn't have the yeah. You know,
he does not have that yeah. But definitely other qualities.
This is actually album from 2018. It's not even a new record. I was listening to Riot City on Spotify, and after the album finished, it bounced me to this, and I perked up. I was like, whoa, what am I listening to? This is really good. I love this entire album. It's a really chilled out album at certain points. It's got some rockers to it, but rockers in the sense of like, this is like mid-70s, you know, like that's as hard as it would get if you were in 1974, that kind of rocker.
Listen to a Blue Oyster Cult album.
Right, that kind of thing. And it's like something that our friend Maurice, friend of the show, Blues Funeral Maurice, would love, like right up his alley. And
I could definitely see that.
And I just love this album. There's like stuff on here, like that guitar playing, that kind of Huey John Roth influence. I love that stuff, and I could just it's like my chilled out summer album right now. So
all right.
I think these guys were from Arizona too, like Tucson or something strange like that, another strange location. So
all right, so let's get into Ashbury.
Dignified name,
like Ashbury Heights,
yeah,
in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Out of the Blue, Eye of the Stygian Witches is the album. Check it out.
Thank you. track. Knock me out of the saddle, and I may not make it back. Yeah, the race that I run wasn't quite what it seemed. Now I feel like I'm caught in a dream. Yes, I feel like I'm caught in a dream. How do you feel at the end of the day? Do you want to pack it in and turn and walk away? Sometimes the easy road is not the one we choose. Sometimes you just gotta lose. Out of the blue, it came from nowhere again. Caught completely by surprise.
Welcome back to MSRcast 220. And that was a new band, I think, for both of us.
It was indeed.
So this is the gentleman you met at Disney World. Or Disneyland. Disneyland.
Yeah. Guys, the vocalist that I met, his name is Nick. This is the band he's in, When the Broken Burn. Mm-hmm. They just did a little mini tour of the, I guess, the West Coast. Yeah. This past week, I believe.
Cool.
Yeah, check them out. They're on Spotify. They're everywhere. Buy their EP. Search them out on Spotify and Bandcamp and all that good stuff. When the Broken Burn. I don't really know a lot about metalcore. Never right. pretend to know. But I like this stuff. I like this band.
Right.
Because to me, it sounds like they're trying a little bit different stuff. There's a different melodies involved and. Just some of the guitar stuff they're doing, which isn't normal for me. And it wasn't the same beat that I associate with a lot of metalcore stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. Like the breakdown, all that kind of
stuff.
Yeah.
There wasn't that breakdown part where every band sounds a fucking same.
Right. Yeah.
And I sort of like how that, I don't know a lot, but it sounds like a lot of the bands that are considered metalcore are sort of breaking away and trying new things and incorporating other elements into the style.
Yeah.
You know.
Suicide Silence is one of them, I think.
Yeah.
They got some flack for doing that recently. But I don't know anything about, I'm not qualified to talk about metalcore.
Maybe we'll get Nick on here and we'll talk to him about it.
Yeah.
I mean, if we don't know, we'll get somebody on here who does.
Yeah.
And before that, there's something I don't know anything about.
Oh, yeah, Ashbury. Yeah, yeah. I this is a great summer rock record, like old school 70s rock record. You know, laid on it by a year. But it's good enough to where I'm like, oh, I wonder what their stuff like in the early days sounded like, too. So I'm kind of into this band now. I'm going to do some exploring on them.
Isn't that fun when you can... You discover a new band, then there's like all this wealth of material to like dive into.
Yeah.
Always such a good time.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess we're getting close to the end of this episode. We've done a lot of new stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Everything from Riot City and Stormlord and Dark Throne paying homage to Bruce Dickinson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what else is going on? What's coming up soon for you? Anything you're looking forward to?
Right now, well, release-wise, no. I'm just kind of – release-wise, I'm more just like receptive to anything right now. Just like I'm more looking for stuff I haven't heard of before. Anything expected down the line, you know, down the way, it's like it'll get here when it gets here. I mean, obviously, like Demons and Wizards, I'm really interested in how that third album is going to sound. But that's way down the road.
You get to see them live.
Yeah.
Which I don't.
I can't think of anything major down the road that I'm like anticipating. Everything major this year already happened, like Avantasia, Swallow the Sun. So all that stuff is already done. So, I don't know. I'm going to keep just an open mind for anything that comes out this summer. One of the things I didn't talk about earlier, I had a weird experience. I went to go see Churches live. That synth pop band.
Okay, with the V.
Yeah, yeah.
CHV. Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm thinking about this now.
Where were they playing?
It was at White Oak, but it was outside.
Oh.
Okay.
They do like outside shows sometimes.
Yeah, right? They have like a big stage set up. And so I was like right next to the stage. I got there like really early. I was like right up there. Super hot. Don't have shows outside in Houston. Like non-metal shows, they're not that loud. Because I saw Florence and the Machine at the Cynthia Woods. I'm like, okay, this is what volume for normal people is like. I'm just used to ear-splitting, you know, and you can feel the rumbling of the guitars and the bass and everything and drums. I was right up next to the stage. Speakers are like right here. And I was just kind of like shocked at like how soft it was where I could hear the person next to me talk like kind of like a normal room, you know, like 6-inch voices volume to their friend next to them rather than hear the vocalist. I'm like, wow, this is like quiet. It was weird. It was a weird experience. It was. Oh, I had a great time. It was a great show, but I don't like normal or just not when I go to a show. I'm not into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fewer of those I have to go to, the better off I'll be, I think. Yeah.
But if the band you really want to see, I mean,
I'm glad I saw them. It's like, yeah, all right. Next time, be inside, please.
There you go.
Yeah.
What you can do while you're inside is check us out on social media.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that segue. That's pretty fluid.
In the air conditioning. Checking out all our social medias.
Coming back from California to Houston, it was like the oppressive heat and just like the humidity is just like, holy crap.
Yeah.
We were in a place where the high was like 67 and all of a sudden we're back here like 95 degrees. You're like, fuck.
Yeah.
And you can feel 95 degrees. It hits you like a ton of bricks.
Just a big
slap on the face.
Big blanket right over it. Yeah.
That's right. So check us out on the interwebs, msrcast.com, metalgeeks.net. If you want to subscribe to the show, find us on iTunes. MSRcast and Metal Geeks are both there together. We're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're on all the cool places you would download your podcast from. We're on, let's see, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all MSRcast, as well as our sister show at Metal Geeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they can find you as well.
At the Metal Pigeon, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Let's talk about this last band, Beelzebubs.
Yeah.
I've heard about them. My wife texted me the other day. She's like, have you heard this band? They were playing them on satellite radio, which she has in the car.
Yeah.
And I had not yet. I knew about it as a project. Hadn't heard it yet. So I popped it up on Spotify. Loved it. So it's a multimedia project. So the guy started this project is cartoons, basically. It's all Finnish. You know, the guys from Finland, most of the people in the band are Finnish. We'll get to that in a second, but check out the cartoons. I don't want to say cartoons because it's not what's the word I'm looking for, like comic strips,
yeah,
type of deal,
yeah.
Which is turned into this band, sort of think of like, you know, Metalocalypse, but not without a TV show type of deal. But there's music videos that are cartoon versions of the band, which turned into a very Looney Tunes ending, which is pretty great.
It's sort of like a comical black metal death clock, sort of, you know?
Yeah. And then we were looking up the band just now, and it turns out the vocalist of this band is and from what band?
Mr. Insomnium.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's Nilo Savanian. Well, hope I'm saying your name correctly, from Insomnium, bass player, vocalist.
We were talking about how like the sound of the song was like a mix of Cradle and Demue.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, totally. You know,
it's like Cradle without the weird Danny high pitch stuff.
Yeah.
But you could definitely hear a lot of the earlier Demue Borgir, like especially with the keyboard melodies and the female vocalist actually not overpowering the song, but just is part of the music, right. Which I like that.
It's interesting how his voice, Nilo's voice, sounds like. He sounds the same as in Insomnium, but in the different context of like this kind of orchestral black metal around him, you're like, you just don't associate it with him.
Right.
So that was a surprise to us. Like, oh, okay. Yeah, I can hear it now. Now that I know it's him, you know?
Exactly. I'm definitely going to listen to this album more. I've only listened to it maybe once.
That was a good song. It was a legitimately great song.
For being something that could be considered a novelty.
Right, a fictional band.
Definitely not which even the name sounds comical in a way.
Yeah.
We will see everybody on the next episode. There's one last thing we need to do. What is that?
Keep it metal.
That's it. I'm going to do that.
Keep it metal.
Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.